Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Hey, Miles, how you doing, buddy?
Airplane.
He loves airplanes. So he's going to be 2 years old later this month, and time is just flying. So I checked iTunes reviews and no new reviews lately. If you are enjoying the show and you want to show a little support, spend a little time and leave a review on iTunes, be awesome. It helps others find the show as well as motivates me to keep these shows going. We're on a weekly schedule, so if you like it, that'd be a great way. Also, we're kicking off these WeChat mastermind calls tonight when the show is airing on Tuesday. It's an exciting way to engage with our cross-border community, and those inside the Chinese firewall that can't get free internet can engage with this WeChat calls. And if you want to check out more, go to globalfromasia.com/WeChat. Okay, and now for this week's show, we are talking sales and marketing. We all need more of that, and a lot of times people kind of get stuck in the product development and sourcing and not on the sales and marketing. We have Gilbert Joa. He is going to be here. He's a New Yorker that's been in Hong Kong for quite some time, and he has experience both on the New York side as well as in Hong Kong and Asia doing outreach, mostly email and calls. This show is actually helpful for anybody doing business anywhere in the world, not only Hong Kong and Asia, but we do kind of compare what he's noticed here from the West. And it's a great one, so get your notebooks out and let's get going. All right, thank you everybody for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have in our TST office, Gilbert Joa. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So it's cool. We've been talking about getting you on the show for a while, and we've known each other for quite some years. I think we first met at the Boot HK co-working space.
Yeah, the Boot HK co-working space back in around 2012, 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's crazy how time is flying. So you're originally from New York? What's your story?
So I'm originally born and raised in New York. I started my first company when I was 17. I was in my first year of college, and I had a professor that was teaching me Java, and he was working on a high-frequency trading platform. He asked me if I was interested, and I didn't know what the hell I was getting myself into, so I agreed with him, and I found myself trying to pitch a million-dollar software to hedge fund managers on Wall Street. So that really got me started in the realm of entrepreneurship. And I've been in Hong Kong for the last 5 years. I've started a few more companies, some failed, and one of them that are still around is Golf Society that I started back in 2012. And we're targeting individuals in their prime between 20 to 40, and basically we're filling a need in Hong Kong where you have a lot of people that come to Hong Kong and want to play golf, but they have no one to play golf with. So we fill this need by creating this society for people to meet people to play golf with. And because a lot of the societies, either they're for very youngsters or people that are really old and retired guys. And I know that from experience, it's not that fun speaking with them on the course. So, you know, that's pretty much what I've been working on for the last few years. And sales is something that I've been very passionate about. And I love to share my stories and ideas.
Great. Yeah, I just learned too about the software in Wall Street. So that definitely needs a lot of sales skills, right? Yes. You were like 17?
Yeah, 17, 18. And I honestly had no idea how to sell it. I was just, I was on the 7th floor of the W Hotel in Midtown. I put on a suit. It was two sizes too big for me. I was trying to, I wasn't even old enough to drink. And then I found a beer in my hand for some reason. I don't recall how that ended up in my hand. But I was just walking around networking, speaking with people, got some people interested, set up some meetings. And then before you know it, some of them were trying to scam me, trying to take the software and reverse engineer it. And then the professor was like, this is not happening. So we eventually had to close down the thing. Because one, because of this case, and two, is the vision that he had for the company was not mine. So, you know, we had our shortcomings.
Sure. That's pretty interesting. And then So now, yeah, so you've been here for 5 years and you've been using, we're going to talk today about lead generation sales within the Hong Kong local market. So this is stuff you're using for the Golf Society? Or
I also picked up, I was in corporate sales before selling gifts. And I especially need it when you have no database of no people and you're trying to lead gen, you're trying to create business. So I think for me, email is fundamental. A lot of people have been trying to get rid of email for a while with Messenger and all of these other tools. But I think email is around to stay because it's most fundamental. It's very easy. People answer on their own time. And it's just not going away anytime soon.
Cool. And so then, you know, you're from New York and, you know, of course, educated there, grown up there. And you're here in Hong Kong building up this golf society and other ventures. So, of course, the common question I can think of is the differences that you've noticed. You probably study mostly the Western strategies and the tools, and you're trying to apply it here. Is there differences?
There's definitely differences, especially in the approach. People in Hong Kong tend to look down upon the more aggressive approach, and they would prefer more subtle approach and not so direct. So in the emails, the words that you would use would be somewhat different. For example, in the US, you might say, I'd like to speak with this person, or can you get me this particular person that's in charge of this marketing? But in Hong Kong, you would ask a more indirect question. You would ask them, are you the appropriate person that I should be speaking with? If you are, blah, 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 how does your calendar look for next week? And we can set up a call or a coffee. Or you would ask them, are you the appropriate person to talk to in regards to this particular need? Or if not, do you know who would be the appropriate person to get in touch with? If so, could you put me in touch with that person? And this approach doesn't come off as needy, doesn't demand that they need to talk to someone. And at the end of the email, what you can also do is a trick that usually gets a lot of replies, which is, if you can, I understand. And that kind of lets them off the hook. It doesn't require that they respond to you or do a favor for you because they don't know you, especially if it's a cold email. But if you're able to add that little short sentence at the end stating that there's no commitment here, then that ultimately gives a lot more power. It feels like you're giving the recipient power rather than you're trying to demand them to do something for you.
Yeah, I would agree. I think in Asia, it's all about being indirect, right? You can't really like hard sell, like especially in New York. I live in New York for a lot of years too. And I think New York, they almost get upset if you're not direct, right?
I got pretty upset as well. It took some time to get used to. And just having to adapt to it, it feels like it's more of an art. There's an art form to it. And depending on who you're speaking with, you might have to adjust your approach. So for people that are more westernized, they might prefer more direct approach. Or if, for instance, even Hong Kong, UK or Australia, they may prefer more laid-back approach. And sometimes, for instance, in emails, I didn't know this before, but if you put lowercases in your subject line, there's a good around 30% higher chance of getting opens because it seems more personal. It doesn't seem like you send out a mass email. And that is one of the tools, like it's a trick because subject line for emails are crucial. Subject lines drive around 80% of traffic to open rates. And keeping the subject line short, 3 to 5 words is important. Also the sentence that comes, the first sentence of your email. Because if you're viewing the email on the mobile phone, what the person is going to see is the first five characters, around 30 characters in the subject line. And they will also see around 20 to 30 characters in the first sentence. So if you have a hook, you put a hook in the subject line that attracts them to click on the email, and you also include something attractive in the first line of your email, that makes it much more likely that people are going to open your email and see what's going on. Of course, you don't want to trick people by misrepresenting your email, putting some hook in there, and then it's actually completely different.
True. So is that be something that's interesting information? Is that what you've learned in Hong Kong specifically, or is that like global kind of strategy?
I believe it works globally because after all, again, it's email, and email, there's a lot of, aside from the cultural differences, a lot of the semantics are more or less the same. It's just the timing, the scheduling of your emails or the timing of it may be slightly different because key differences is in the US, people generally get off at 5. But in Hong Kong, the normal time to get off is around 6. And some people stay until 7 or 8 or even 9. So that might be a difference when sending out emails. Sending emails after hours can also be effective as well because after hour emails, people on their way home or cooking dinner or just after dinner, just sitting down, taking some time to relax, they might also have some time to read some emails. So they would just sit on their couch, open their iPad or take out their phone and try to reply to emails. And if you send emails at that time, you are more likely to pop up when the email volume sent at that moment is the lowest.
Awesome. So, yeah, I mean, I think I've read a lot of articles. I think Hong Kong is the most workaholics globally. I'm not sure if you've heard that too, but it seems like Hong Kong is always working.
Yes, I totally believe that because even myself, there's sometimes I find myself up 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, still just thumbing away at the computer, trying to send out emails. And some people even answer emails at 2 a.m. I've seen that happen before. And if people answer my emails at 2 a.m., I generally don't reply to them until the morning. But I just know that this sort of thing happens and it's very common, and people probably don't find it unusual here because, no, they say New York is the city that never sleeps, but Hong Kong also seems like people never stop working. It's like 24 hours.
Maybe my idea is, I think it's because it's very global. So I've met a lot of people that work like US shifts here for finance and stuff. And it seems like here it's normal to deal with people around the world and different time zones. And whereas New York is... I worked on a trading floor and it was not normal. Everybody seems to work around the New York schedule, like in the UK and Hong Kong. Everybody kind of fit the US time. But I think in Hong Kong, people are more flexible to just do late night calls or beyond call more. So it's interesting to hear this too. So for other parts of Asia, do you have any ideas or feedback on that? Or
personally speaking, I don't have much experience working in other countries in Asia, but I know for certain in Hong Kong, I can say with high confidence that the tips I just mentioned is pretty accurate, and it's bound to help drive leads, drive sales for sure.
And then, so I guess if it's dealing with email, it's probably similar tools, or do you have any, maybe we'll talk about tools in general, like... Are you, the global tools are working? Which ones are you using? And
so I'm sure everyone's familiar with LinkedIn, and I use LinkedIn. There's a function called Sales Navigator. And what Sales Navigator is, it allows you to look at different people's profiles and save them as leads. And you can do the filter systems that the premium accounts can do. And I believe there's 1 month free. If you do a trial version of it, you can test it out. But it runs around 60 US a month afterward. But I totally believe it's worth the investment because you can save the leads, you can save companies as accounts, and then you would have many accounts and you'll be able to stay on track with the companies you're approaching, who you're approaching at those companies, write down any notes that you may have. And ultimately, LinkedIn... Not only you can do the Sales Navigator, there's a tool that's called Profile Hopper. And this is sort of a very subtle way of getting people's attention. So Profile Hopper does is that you install it in around Google Chrome. Use Google Chrome, install it, and there's this frog that shows up. And it just hops you choose, you make your filter systems. Say you're looking for marketing, a specific role in marketing, head of marketing or marketing executive. And what Profile Hopper will do is it'll filter the results and it'll go click on each of these profiles. And you can go up to 1,000 per day. So what you're essentially doing is you're clicking on people's profiles, and what they will see is that you clicked on their profile. They'll get a notification and then they will be able to click on your profile and see, okay, what is this? Why did this guy click on my profile? Everyone is curious when people click on their profile and trying to understand, okay, how come this guy wandered on my profile? And I think this also affects how you show up in the LinkedIn searches when people on suggestions, do you know this person? Because if you're constantly clicking on people in that particular industry, it'll bring up more results for other people in that industry when searching. So that is one of the tools that was referred to me by a friend, and I think it works wonders. If there's a free trial for 14 days, afterwards it's like $10. Again, it's over the investment.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. So yeah, Chrome plugin. We'll link these on the show notes too. So basically these both are LinkedIn tools. I know we were talking before we start recording. There's other tools too that you're familiar with that I think maybe some people might know, but it could help others.
Yes, definitely. So a lot of things I notice people do is they don't track their emails. And if you don't track your emails, you don't know if people click on them. You don't know if you send an email, is this guy getting back to me? And what tends to happen is it falls out of the loop and you're completely unknown in the dark. So what I do is I use software such as Sidekick and Yesware. Yesware is YESWARE. And I prefer Yesware because Yesware, I will talk more about later. It includes a report feature. It will also have mail merge and multi-stage campaign mail merges, which enables you to automate your email prospecting system. And that is fundamental, especially if you might be the only salesperson on your team or you only have a small team of salespeople. You can also sync up your profiles with the other salespeople on your team to see who's reaching who and the results each of you are getting in terms of replies, opens, and you have all the email conversations mapped out. But in terms of tracking, Yesware they'll embed a small pixel in each of your emails, just like what MailChimp would do for marketing emails. And when people open your emails, you will see that they open the email on the spot. So it's in real time, and it's a dashboard. One of the tricks I've learned is if someone opens your email, that's the perfect time to reach out to them. So if you have their phone number on hand, what you can do is as soon as they open the email, you can try giving them a call maybe 5 minutes later. And people might think, oh, it's creepy, but it might also be a sign of serendipity. Just so happens that this person that emailed me, I opened this email and then 5 minutes later, I get a call from this guy. And I don't ask him, have you opened my email? I know he's opened my, or she's opened my email. I just ask, hey, I thought of you. I sent you an email a while back. I was wondering if you were able to, you know, look through it and if there's anything we can discuss. And then you can get the conversation going, because if not, they might forget that they've opened the email from you and then it just happens to get lost in the mix. So that's one of the tricks for using for tracking emails. And what you can also do with tracking emails is you can schedule the software to send you reminders. So if this person opens, for instance, if this person opens the email, but he hasn't replied to me within 3 days, then send me a reminder telling me that I should be following up with this person. Or it could be this person has opened the email, but he has not replied. And Sidekick also does this as well. But I believe I started with Sidekick and I thought Yesware worked better for me. And Yesware is around $10 per user. And if you want the pro version, the professional version for a team, that is $25 US a month. And again, I think these tools are essential because you don't want to be, one, you don't want to be left in the dark. And two, this sort of knowledge that you get from using these tools will definitely help you in converting from lead to a potential prospect and then later to a closed deal.
No, that's definitely good. I think, I forget the exact quote, but it's all in a follow-up. So I think a lot of people get discouraged. They blast out 100 emails and nobody replies and they just kind of give up and think nobody wants their product or service. But I think most of the time you maybe talk a little bit about following up.
Yes, I think follow-up is crucial for just sales success in general. The studies show that it would take roughly 7 emails before you get a reply or a close or something. And follow-up, why I mentioned the multi-stage campaigns before is the multi-stage campaigns for Yesware will allow you to follow up with your leads, your contacts, your prospects, and keep you sane, because if you were trying to manually do all of this, it would seem quite difficult task to surmount, especially if you are sole outbound sales as I was before, and it's just you have to just work the whole system. So what Yesware provides you is you write each stage, you have several stages of your email. You can put up to 10 stages. So that's 10 single email followed by 10 follow-up emails, depending on whether they reply to you or not. So it can automatically shut off the emails, sending those follow-up emails once someone has replied to you. So the first email, I would tell you more about the structure of the email in terms of subject line and then just briefly on what is actually in the email. So the first email would be an interest email. I always try to sell the meeting. I never try to sell my product, especially in the first email, because the person on the other side, they don't know who you are and there's no need for them to reply. There's no incentive for them to reply. At least, you know, even if the product is right for them, they might not see the need to reply. So the first email is really finding the appropriate person. And one of the subject lines I used that is very good, I put the first name of the person in there. So what mail merge is, for those who don't know, you can make an Excel spreadsheet and you would make columns. Each of the columns corresponds to different parts of the email. So in curly brackets, I would put first name. In the Excel file, it'll pull all the information from the first name and it'll insert to each of the emails I'm sending out. So for instance, the guy's name is Bob. So I send email in the subject line saying Bob, appropriate person, question mark. And then this sort of lures him. Everyone likes to see their first name. And it shows that it's somewhat personal. So the first line will say something like, hi Bob, I heard, and then you can cut it, you can sort of, I heard, or you the first 3 words of your email after the greeting is crucial. So you want something, you want to put something there that allows them to click on it. So the first few sentences will go along the lines of, I was wondering if you were the appropriate person to speak to in regards to, or maybe in a more informal term, I was wondering if you're the right person to talk to regarding marketing solutions. Or you want to make it as vague as possible. You don't want to put very specific constraints around what you're looking for, because then they would just say, oh, I know, it's this person, instantly. You want them to think for a moment. And when they think, they generally feel like they're doing you a favor. And they might not know if that person's actually handling that stuff, but they will make a referral. So you ask, the call to action in the first email happens twice. The first in the first 2 sentences, and then at the end, where you say, if you're the appropriate person to talk to after you send your body, how does your calendar look to talk further? If not, who would be the right person I should be speaking with? And then the body would basically just briefly describe what problem you're solving. You're not talking about the product yet. Honestly, it doesn't matter what the product is at this point, because as long as you identify there's a problem, and then you just say that there's a way I can help you. So if you wrote in the bodies that, you know, I checked out your website and I found out that, I was wondering if you knew that you can be losing up to 40% of your traffic by not doing X, and whatever X could be. And that would just lure them in. Because they know that, okay, if they make a recommendation to a colleague that handles this or they handle it, they'll be doing themselves a favor or they'll be doing someone else a favor. And it's just very easy for them to get the reply. Once they reply, then the doors are open. So that would be the first email. And once you send the first email, the typical response rate is around 3 to 5%. Which is very standard in industry levels, industry standards. So, but but usually most of the replies come after the fourth email. So the second email you would say is something along the lines of, I hope all is well. And it shows that you care about the person. And it's a little more personal and the email goes the same way. Hi, Bob. I hope all is well. I sent you an email a few days ago wondering if you were able to receive it. I was hoping you can put me in touch with the person that handles this and then so forth. Same thing as the previous email with the same call to action. The third email would be a little more focused on what you're trying to sell now. Now, third email, by now they know that you're looking for this person. Now you want to get them more interested in what you have to offer. So you focus more on your product now. You add maybe three sentences about your product, but don't go into deep detail talking about who you are. Because if you want to keep the email as concise as possible without using sentences or words that will just be fluff. So you just get to the point. And then by the fourth email, you might even want to throw a joke in there. Right. You might reference, in the US this would work pretty well, and it's referencing a pop culture question. It's like, should I stay or should I go? ? Lowercase in the subject line. And this typically gets me a lot of response, even in Hong Kong. And what I write in there is, hi, I've reached out to you a few times already. I'm not sure if you're too busy or if you're interested but you don't have time to respond, or maybe if you've fallen and can't get up, maybe I need to call someone to help you. So it's something that is just could be and often humor, but you want to draw a line here because in Hong Kong, some people that receive it might be offended by this response. And I have gotten some replies to this email. It has gotten replies, but some of the replies were not so good because it seems that the person was offended by the last statement I made. So this by this email, you would probably get most of the responses would come during this email, around the fourth email. And the fifth email is usually where I just do a break off email. In terms of prospecting, I wouldn't spend too much time after this email. And the fifth email, I would put something like in the subject line, one last try, ? Lowercase again. And one last try and just pretty much ask them, this is my last time reaching out to you. I don't want to bother you. If you still want to talk, give me 5 minutes of your time, then give me a call. You write down your landline and then you just end the email there. And I would expect maybe 10% of people replying here, but adding the first four emails together, the response rates typically hover around 30%. If you can get 30% on 100 emails, that's really well, really good. 30% respond. Open rate around 60%. So it's above industry standards by a long shot, because most people give up after the first email. So you don't want to do that.
Great. You mentioned about people getting offended. I think that's going to happen in sales and marketing anyway. I don't know if that's specifically Hong Kong, you think, or that's probably just anywhere, no?
Yeah, that happens everywhere. And you don't really know who's going to get offended, who's not going to get offended. And in closing with tools, there's this tool I checked out, which is called Crystal. And Crystal pretty much it analyzes people's personality and tells you how you should email people. So they will look at their social profiles and their Facebook, LinkedIn, and they will tell you what type of style you should talk to this person in. And I think it helped me a bit. But in terms of accuracy, I'm not sure how accurate this software is. But the if you Google Crystal Knows, Crystal Knows, that would be K-N-O-W-S. You will be able to just try it out, see if it works for you. And yeah.
Cool. Well, it's been amazing so far. Thanks again. So skills, you know, is there some kind of skills that maybe people in doing business in Hong Kong or in Asia that to improve their sales that you think?
Networking is definitely one of them. In terms of lead gen, speaking with people at conferences, a lot of my customers have came from conferences, but not in just showing up at a conference and trying to do biz dev or sales prospecting there. I would do research on the conference. And I would find out the list of speakers. I would find out potentially list of attendees that would be attending. And I try to reach out to them beforehand. Because in terms of speakers, a lot of people try to reach the speaker during the day. But I try to reach the speaker before that happens. And if I can get a response from them, it is pretty much a go sign telling me I can go approach the person in person at the day of the event. And I can open up a much more larger connection with this person. And that actually was one of the things that happened with the CEO of Ocean Park. And he was at a HR conference. He was speaker there about a few months ago. And I reached out to him before. I asked him a little bit about cultural differences. And he answered me, he said, speak to me on the day. So on the day of the conference, after he spoke, there was a line of people waiting to talk to him. And all I had to do was just walk up to him and say, hey, Tom, I'm Gilbert. We spoke on email. So about that question. And then instantly, there was a connection. Because what is the chance of Tom remembering anybody in that room? Very little to none. But if I told you that he had a prior connection with me before the event, and then reigniting this connection during the event, it will be able to open the doors for a much better connection and relationship. And that, and I'm still connected with Tom to this day, and it's really worked wonders for me.
This is really great. And I think maybe I don't want to pop a trick question on you, but you're talking about a lot of offline kind of things like coffee meetings, conferences. And I think the general trend I've noticed in Hong Kong is a lot of face-to-face in business and in networking. I think you've also worked in New York. So I think you can do more on the phone and email in the US than I think in Hong Kong. Would you?
Yeah, Hong Kong does a lot of face-to-face coffee meetings. And especially in the emails, even on the phone, you want to sell the meeting. You don't want to sell the product. So once you sell the meeting, you get see them face to face, you give much bigger chance of closing the deal. And even after you meet the person, you will still have to follow up. And that would probably take another 7 times before you close the deal. And we all know like B2B cycles. In the US, they can be quite long, around 2 to 3 months. Hong Kong, roughly the same. Some deal cycles can go up to 6 months, and you got to be really prepared. It takes a lot of persistence and a lot of effort to keep going and following up with this person until either he says no, or even if he says no, you keep going. But until he decides not to buy, or it's just he buys.
Yeah, I just wanted to make that clear. I think we kind of assumed that, but it seems like everything in Hong Kong is meeting face-to-face for. We talked about banking a lot on the show, and everything else is still kind of traditional here. So we're kind of going, it's been a really great talk, and I want to get this in, is what's like a typical day for you with like sales lead gen in Hong Kong?
I think what I left out was a good time to reach out to people. And I usually start my Mondays doing research and following up with emails that were sent the previous week. And my Monday is usually focused on research and just compiling a list of people I want to reach out to, making sure my CRM is up to date, my deals are, that my pipeline is full, And if they're not full, I need to make a plan when I'm, how many meetings I need to schedule this week. I have a meeting tracker. And the best time to do prospecting would be Tuesday and Thursday. So Tuesday, if you make phone calls and emails, it would be before 10 a.m. Same for Thursday. And in the afternoon, it will be somewhere between 2:30 to 5 p.m. This is the time where people are usually available. And Tuesday, Thursday afternoons, people tend to be more available than not, especially Thursday afternoon. But when you reach out to people on Friday, they tend to be caught up with trying to leave the office, or they have some more heavy project to work on, then they cannot even leave the office. So Wednesday is also good for meetings. So Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday is my preferred schedule for doing meetings. And on a typical day, I break my days into themes. I took this from the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey. Dorsey, and he breaks his weeks down into themes so that he can stay sane. So they have a day for prospecting, I have a day for research, I have a day for meetings, I have a day for recapping, I have a day for just making sure things are flowing smoothly. So I repeat this every week, and every month I do report with the team, see how it's going, what we can do next month. And just explain the strategy, the tactics that we're working on, and so forth.
Awesome. So thank you for coming on. So you're talking about your golf society. Do you want to kind of share some of the developments there? And maybe some people could contact you and be a lead?
Oh, certainly. So for the golf society, what we're really focused on this year is working more with corporates. We're trying to do some corporate events. And of course, if any company like to do a golf day, we love to help them. We've hosted more than 200 events in the last 4 years. We hold three tournaments a year, and we just had one of our record breaking tournaments 2 weeks ago. So it was very exciting. And this year, we're just focused on getting more exposure, growing the society, getting more members on board, and then getting more corporates on board as well.
Awesome. And how can people reach out to you and your business?
So you can reach me through email at gilbert@hkpgs.com. You can also visit our website, hkpgs.com. You can see a lot of our upcoming events. We also have a meetup group. If you type in meetup.com/HKGolf, so that's HKGOLF, and you'll be able to see we are pretty much the most active meetup group for golf in Hong Kong. And I say that with complete certainty because we are now. And we love to have you. We have a lot of expats in our playing with us. We also have a lot of events. We do two events per month. And we also have a number of tournaments and social events, happy hour and cocktails that we love to have see you at.
Cool. Maybe we can have a Global from Asia golf night in Hong Kong.
Wow. Sounds good. Yeah. Sounds good.
Although I can do mini golf. Do you have mini golf?
Oh, we can do driving range. And then we there's a place in Causeway Bay, and there's an inside out in the South China Athletics Association. So upstairs is the inside out. So after a round at the driving range, we can go upstairs for a beer or something.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it, man. All right. That's a wrap.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. My pleasure. Okay, great. That was a good one. Thank you, Gilbert. And he's on his way to New York City for a couple of months. He'll be back in June. And I'm excited to see him when he's back on this side of the world. And we have tons of episodes lined up. Next week, we have Casey Lau from Startups HK talked about the Rise Conference coming and the state of the startup scene here in Hong Kong. And then we already have a few more ready after that about China sourcing and manufacturing and trade shows. So if you want to keep up with the inside scoop, don't forget we have a free weekly newsletter. I spend a bit of time there making it fun and informative with news in the industry, the blog, and updates in life and business. globalfromasia.com/subscribe to get that, even with a free new ebook I wrote up that might be awesome for you. So that's it for this week. Have a great week, and as always, keep rocking your global business. Take care. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.